So I am so excited to welcome a guest to the podcast today. Welcome, Kathy Marcus.
Thank you, Allison. Very happy to be here.
So excited. I know we were chatting for a few minutes before we started recording, and she said our stories are pretty similar. So I'm excited to hear hers. You're going to be hearing it the same time I am. So it's going to be a great episode. All right. So we're going to dive right in. If you want to share your story, that would be awesome.
Okay, great. Well, I'm 52 now, so there's a lot of years in between, and I've been sober for 22 years now. But I very clearly remember how it was, which is, you know, a big part of keeping it green and being committed to this lifestyle one day at a time. And I've learned a lot about 24-hour living along the way and how important that is. But my story is, I was raised by educated parents that were very successful. My mom was a teacher. My father was a physician. And I'm one of those people who was very fortunate to have a lot of blessings in life, taken care of in a lot of ways. But in looking back, I think the one thing that was really missing in my home was communication, healthy communication. Healthy processing of emotions, and also authenticity. You know, I did not necessarily see a modeling of, you know, somebody behaving in a way that was consistent with how they felt. So, you know, from a young age, I think I learned to stuff my emotions. I did not have somebody modeling for me. I mean, my mother was raised in a home where her father was a gambler. You know, and one of the great things about recovery is when we get to know the stories of the people who have impacted us a lot, that can generate a lot of compassion and understanding for why they behaved in the ways they behaved and the lack of coping mechanisms or coping skills and how things move from one generation to the next. But so my mother had to grow up young and with a lot of defenses and not feeling the feelings, but just getting through things, and modeled that for me. And I kind of picked up that ball and ran with it myself. I was a very much an achiever, you know, straight A student. I had a lot of friends. You know, on the outside, on paper, you would say, why would this girl want to use alcohol or drugs in the first place ever? It seemed like I had everything going for me. But inside, I was a ticking time bomb waiting to go off. And by the time I got to college, that time bomb went off. I was a perfectionist. I didn't know it. A perfectionist who wouldn't feel feelings. And that is the perfect equation for a time bomb. And so I got to college, and I call it the Medusa of addictions. But I literally sprouted 5 heads. I was acting out with alcohol, drugs, relationships, pills, cigarettes, codependency, you name it. I was just all over the place with, you know, I was terrified. I was on my own. I had been very dependent on my mom. My mom was very controlling. She, a very wonderful woman, but with her fear, very controlling. And I let her control. And then I got to college and I felt completely out of control. So for me, I was using a lot of different substances and things to help me anesthetize all of that fear. And it wasn't until I graduated and I was in the workforce for a while that I really started to get sick. And thank God my body just couldn't take. I was doing a lot to it. I was abusing my body in so many different ways and it couldn't take it. And so I hit my bottom around the age of 31. I came into recovery in 1999. And, you know, all I know is that I prayed. I remember writing a letter to God. I was raised Jewish, but not religious at all. Didn't really have a relationship with a higher power. Didn't think this higher power was really that interested in me since I was such a hot mess. And I didn't even approve of the way I was living my life. And so I didn't feel like that higher power would be interested in me, but I prayed despite myself. And I asked for angels to come to my pillow and assist me. I don't know where that came from. And the next thing I know, I was in an emergency room with a drug and alcohol induced seizure and sitting in front of a cardiologist who said, you know what, young lady, you need a 12-step program. And for the first time, I agreed I needed help.
So that was your quote unquote rock bottom, right? I truly believe, you know, we all have our own rock bottoms. It doesn't have to get to that point, right? But that was your defining moment, right? To turn it around.
That was the only moment where I was really willing to surrender and start listening to other people and put my welfare ahead of my image.
Now, when you say put your welfare ahead of your image, what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So going back to, you know, that achieving mentality, that perfectionistic mentality that I see with so many women, you know, wanting to look and appear a certain way on the outside. I have it all together, you know, looking for that validation, which is a whole nother addiction in itself. You should approve of me. It doesn't matter how I feel on the inside. That was always more important to me, how I appeared versus how it was internally.
Absolutely. And you nailed that. I think in the world that we live in now, more people care about how they look on the outside than, you know, how they feel on the inside. They want to say or appear like they have it all together, right? They're all put together. Nothing is wrong. But on the inside, like you said, they're like really crumbling. And when you said you were a ticking time bomb, I was like, wow, that really resonated with me because that's exactly how I felt, right? Like before college, everything was just really, really welling up inside. And then I went off to college and it was like, boom, definitely totally. Explosion.
Totally. And I think that's very common too. I pride myself on being a really good listener. I never knew that I was, but I have always been a really good listener. And so I've always noticed these trends in recovery of like where, especially the women seem to really come together and we relate to each other. And that going off away from home, you know, I guess if you're fortunate to have had a home life, not everybody does. But if you have a home and then you leave that nest and there's been a lot of dysfunction, it's a very scary time.
A lot of uncertainty, which many of us don't like, right? That uncertainty piece.
Completely. And, you know, going back to the, you know, I learned in early recovery, I had a phenomenal sponsor and she kept telling me that the insides create the outsides. And I had no idea really what she was talking about, you know? And then I got experience with steps and doing that inner work of starting to look at what I believe and what I feel and how that might be skewed, right? And then being introduced to other women, I think that's why I think it's so important that we're around other women, whether we're not sure if we have a drinking problem or we know we have a drinking problem. It's so wonderful what you're doing, Allison, these podcasts, that there's so many different avenues now for women to be exposed to the internal life of other women so that we can go, oh yeah, I identify with that. She's telling my story. She feels exactly the way that I feel. I'm not the only crazy one. Cause I mean, I thought I was the only crazy one. I'm not going to admit this stuff that's going on in my head because you'll think I'm nuts and never talk to me.
Right. And that's it. Like, we think we're alone. We think we're the only ones going through this, but we're not. And that's why it's so important. And it's so good to see so many others, specifically women, really opening up, being vulnerable, and sharing their story. I think that's been the greatest thing that's happened, and especially the last, you know, couple years with this Sober Curious movement, is more women are sharing. And more women are sharing that you don't have to hit this quote unquote rock bottom to quit drinking. If alcohol isn't serving you, if you feel that alcohol is not serving you in any way, then it's perfectly okay to stop drinking.
And, you know, that's where it gets confusing, I think, for a lot of people, Allison, because it still is kind of serving them, but it's all, they're also a slave to it. And, you know, and then they can stay in that phase for so long, you know, and I know that phase too, right?
Right.
And that's where I go back to, and I'm not religious at all, but I go back to, I'm a neuroscience coach also. I've learned about how we create our lives scientifically, you know, through energy and this, and the fact that what we think about comes about, right? And so why it's so, especially with our emotions, we're always creating, whether it's consciously or unconsciously. Mm-hmm. And I like to say before recovery, I was an unconscious creator of a huge mess. And then I came into recovery and then even got my degree as a neuroscience coach. And I learned how to be a conscious creator of positive, you know, good things that I right. want to create. And that doesn't mean I don't still create a mess, because I can easily create a mess. And I want people to know that too, that just because you get 22 years in the program, it's still one day at a time. Mm-hmm. There's always new layers to the recovery. And that's why at the beginning, I brought up how important it is, the 24-hour living. You know, I can't even stress that enough, because, you know, we tend to project, and we can project in the negative a lot, and it can be very overwhelming. And there, you know, that's a person wanting to drink again right there.
Absolutely.
Day in the day, and ask ourselves, what kept me sober yesterday? What worked yesterday? Let me try to repeat some of that today and then add to it, maybe learn something new today.
Absolutely. You know, that's something that my clients struggle with in the beginning, right? They're thinking about the what ifs, they're future tripping, they're thinking yeah. about the vacation 2 months away. And I'm like, you know, let's just rein it in. Let's just think about today. Let's get through today first, and then we can worry about that. You know, it really is one day at a time. But, you know, it's so hard in this culture that we're in to stay present, right? I think that's one of the hardest things, is to stay within the moment that you're in, which is, I mean, that's one of the reasons why we drank, right? Because we didn't want to be in the present.
Well, and you bring up such a great point, because really what I have found out, Allison, which is amazing to me, is so much of this is the overwhelming feelings. It's the feelings. I mean, I just went through this yesterday. Okay. This is yesterday. Last night, I was in the worst mood ever. I had no idea why I was in this mood, but I know this morning because I got clarity. But, you know, I made a big life change at 52. I was in the pharmaceutical arena for 20 years. I was making a huge six-figure income, and a couple of different events occurred where I ended up deciding, you know what, I've always wanted to be a coach. I've got this background with addiction and recovery. I feel like I should be helping more people. And it just organically, not smoothly, but organically worked out that way, that I changed directions. But just last night, emotions, I didn't want to feel in my head, oh my God, everything is terrible. You know, nothing's working out for me. I should have never left pharma. I mean, this is what was swirling in my head. And then this morning I went for a bike ride. I knew I need to move the energy. Mm-hmm. And I went bike riding. And while I was riding, then the insight came. Kathy, you're just not wanting to feel some of the feelings that are coming up. And this need for self-compassion, okay, which is in the beginning of recovery, I used to get annoyed with those women that would be like telling me to just love myself and put the bat down. And I wanted to hit them with the bat, honestly. Right. I will hit you with the bat. So if I knew how to do that, I would do that. But I don't know how to do that. And 22 years into recovery, I'm first really learning the last couple of years how to treat myself with that kid glove that I would to you in a second. You would come to me and I'd be hugging you and there for you and listen to you and, you know, help you understand why it makes sense that you feel the way you feel, right? Compassion. And yet to do it for ourselves can sometimes be the most challenging and difficult job, because we're accustomed to beating ourselves up, all the shame and the guilt. So I think emotions, learning that there are no bad emotions, I didn't even know that. And that didn't come from AA. That came from outside. That came from, you know, the process I take people through, which is really about helping people change their emotional set point, so that they can easily create what they want to create. And it's about joy. It's about being in your lane. It's about being authentic. To me, addiction is, besides the genetic components, It's really about abandoning the self at a deep level.
I like the way that you put that, abandoning the self at the deep level. And to go back, like, we are our own worst critics, right? Like you said, we would, you know, if a friend was struggling like we were, we would give them so much compassion, offer support. But when we're in that same position, we are so hard on ourselves and beating ourselves up. And that's something that, you know, I see over and over again with my clients is, you know, start trying to give yourself that same love that you would give to somebody else. Obviously, that doesn't happen overnight, right? It's not like you can just, I believe, it's not like you can just flip a switch and all of a sudden you've got love for yourself. It's a gradual process.
Totally. I remember sitting in meetings, you know, 17 years in recovery, and people were talking about loving themselves. And one thing I know, maybe overly so, but I'm very real. I'll put everything out there. I always have. And I remember raising my hand saying, you know, I know that I'm capable of so much. I had a lot of self-confidence in my abilities, but self-love was nowhere to be found. This is 17 years in recovery. And I was like, I don't love myself. I don't even know what you guys are talking about, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And at that, what was interesting is, you know, I was in pharma, I was making a lot of money, but my son was getting bullied. He's part of the LGBTQ community. So proud of him. Came out at the age of 12. Wow. But, you know, was going through a lot. My mother was dying from lung cancer that had metastasized to her brain. And I was working, like, you know, overtime in pharma, you know, not realizing I was trying to anesthetize my emotions with the overworking. And so I was just go, 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 Energizer Bunny. I wasn't going to as many meetings. I was doing a lot of hot yoga. I didn't even realize. I was like full throttle in addictions again, even though I wasn't drinking and I wasn't drugging. I was using a lot of other things, even Bloomingdale's I was using. I was definitely using Bloomingdale's to get me through the emotional storm of knowing my mom was dying, of being powerless over my child getting bullied, which is is so awful.
Yeah.
You know, this is the real stuff that goes on in recovery, the powerlessness of, you know, when you love people and they're hurting and you're sober and you're watching, it can be really, really difficult and overwhelming to feel those feelings, which is again, where I go back to, you know, giving each other a really sacred, safe space to just be who we are, messy and all, right? Running down your nose, all of it. You know, like I just think that's the biggest gift we can give to each other is that safe space to land. And I learned about that as a mom because I had a lot of my mom had really high expectations. And very image oriented, what people think, and so, you know, I was living that way. And then here I have a child who, you know, at the age of 2 or 3 wants to put on my high heel shoes and, you know, the pink princess dress. And, you know, it was going for, you know, we went to Disney World and he didn't want Mickey Mouse doll. He wanted Minnie Mouse, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm watching this and I'm in a room full of people in Disney World and the child is like going to the girl stuff. And I have to be honest, I was like embarrassed. I was uncomfortable. I was like, what's going on here? You know, and it was repetitive in every situation. And I'm the most open-minded person in the world. But I found out that I was really worried about what people think through my child. I was like, wow, I'm caring more about what they think than who he is. And so he ended up being the biggest guru teacher. He still is for me in so many ways. His presence was a call to action for me to become more authentic. What do I value? What do I care about? You know, what am I going to put first? Other people or my child? Mm-hmm. So, you know, was so grateful for some of those experiences. But again, in honesty, very tough, very uncomfortable. You know, I didn't want to feel that way. I just wanted to look good. you know, and I was put on a track. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was a track of authenticity. I'm so proud now of being his mother. This kid is a trailblazer. I'm like, he's 12 and he's out. Oh my God, you know, and helping other kids to come out, you know, and be comfortable with who they are. And so it's just so interesting over time. What we think is the, I call it the gift in ugly wrapping paper. You know, so we get these gifts that we say, oh, that's the ugliest wrapping paper. And it ends up being the most precious gift, just like recovery.
Absolutely. And, you know, people sometimes think like, oh, I get sober and, you know, everything's going to be great. Like, life still goes on, right? Like, people are going to die. You're going to have shitty days. Things are going to happen and you're going to have to handle those situations without alcohol, right? And, you know, that's where a lot of people will stumble and as well transfer it to other addictions like you were talking about.
Yeah. So what's been really interesting for me that I learned in my new career, going back to like the neuroscience, is that we have these neural pathways that are created in our brain that are based on repetitive thoughts and actions, right? And feelings and beliefs. And they become like, I look at it like a train track. You know, they just become very embedded over time, repetitive thought, action, feeling, belief, and here's that track. And this is why we learn early in recovery too. The track never goes away. Don't fool yourself. Just because you shift over to this new track of recovery and healing and you embed that new track, the other track is always going to be there, which is what I learned a couple years ago when I wasn't willing to, not even willing, I didn't even know that my issue was the emotions. So I didn't realize I was running from all those emotions, wasn't willing to feel them. And then all of a sudden I break out with these rashes all over my body. I was taking this green vibrance powder or something because I needed a quick fix to get all my fruits and vegetables and probiotics, yada, yada, all in one drink, you know, quick fix. And didn't realize that these chemicals could give me an allergic reaction. So I get this allergic reaction and rashes are covering my body. And I go to a nutritionist ultimately to try to fix this. And she puts me on an elimination diet. And my history, I was bulimic. Well, that's one of my addictions when I was in college. You're never supposed to put somebody with an eating disorder on an elimination diet. So here I am, full throttle fear and anxiety and running from myself, 17 years in recovery, put on this diet, and all of a sudden I'm facing, I didn't realize this, Allison, but good food, bad food. Good, because she puts me on the diet. So the gluten-free is good and the gluten is bad, or, you know, whatever it was. All of a sudden, that shifts me onto the neural pathway of eating disorder. Mm-hmm. Now, and I'm wanting to eat. I have recovery from bulimia, but the next thing you know, I'm crazy about what I can eat and not eat on this elimination diet. And I mutate into something that I never even knew existed called orthorexia. Orthorexia, I think, is the name of it, where, and this you see with a lot of women too, in and out of recovery, restricting. They restrict what they eat. They call it a diet. They call it gluten-free, but it's really a form of restriction in it, and it's very much tied into feeling chaotic and wanting control. You know, so we do it through the diet. Now, and of course, there's healthy foods and there's a healthy way to go about it. But what I'm talking about is kind of like you're just in this compulsion mode of it has to be this way and you're afraid if it's not that way. It's very rigid. And I became that way. With this diet, I ended up losing, I was like 109 pounds, I'm 5'7", after 2 months of doing her elimination diet. And I was terrified because now I looked anorexic and I am in recovery and what the heck is going on? And I ended up having to say yes to being sent to a treatment center. I had never been in treatment. When I came into recovery, I did it through the rooms. I went to 5 meetings a day. I just turned the rooms into treatment for alcohol and drugs, but I had never been to treatment. I now go to treatment in Arizona because that's the only place they say that can get the weight back on me and help me understand what's going on, and which was terrifying because there were girls there, Allison, that were, you know, 8 years old with feeding tubes up their nose. Wow. And I was saying, what kind of world do we live in that an 8-year-old is so messed up with the feeding tube up the nose? But there is where I learned, and I was vibrating, okay? My hands and my feet were vibrating. I had rashes all over my body. And what I didn't realize is that I needed to feel. Literally, the message I walked away from that experience was learning how to feel. And so much had come up at once that I was overwhelmed and terrified. But even right now, yesterday, I had the reminder, oh, I think what you were having was one of those episodes of having a lot of emotions come up at once, getting completely overwhelmed by it, trying to just get through it on your own. And that could be a formula for disaster in recovery. So I think it's really, really important for anybody in recovery to know that the feelings aren't facts. They used to say that in the beginning of recovery too. Your feelings aren't facts. That would confuse me. What does that mean? Right. Well, now I know that, you know, a lot of my feelings stem from what I'm thinking. And what I'm thinking a lot of times is some crazy story I'm telling myself that's not a fact. And it's generating those feelings. But the bigger picture is that I need help in those moments. I need spiritual help, which comes through, you know, praying, which comes from meditating, which comes from talking to somebody like you, a coach, somebody else, going to a meeting, but opening myself to help is what I would say is so, so key, because one of my other addictions is self-sufficiency, and that's not a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, I hear you. That independent, right? Like, I can do it. I don't need any help. And that's something that I also agree that women tend to do a lot as well. Would you agree?
Yeah. And, you know, for you and I, Allison, who are both coaches, and I do recovery coaching and treatment centers too, you know, we have to be more careful. People who are in recovery, who also are in healing professions, you know, recovery-based professions, I'm thankful somebody told me this early on. We need to be really, really careful, because we are sharing a lot of wisdom and help with other people, right? And we can hear and identify a lot of what's going on with other people and help them. But we have to be careful not to try to coach ourselves all the time. And I am guilty of that. I'll be like, oh, I'll just analyze myself here. I'll just, you know, look at this myself here. And even though I have a lot of intuition and insight and a lot does come through for me, I do get clarity that way, I have to be careful that, you know, I call my sponsor or I call another woman and I tell the truth of what's going on and the difficulties I'm having. You know, that's the real humility. I don't want to miss that humility piece, because all of a sudden then you can be larger than God, you know, and fall off. That's a great way to fall off the recovery path.
So do you feel like even, you know, 21, 22 years in, that it's still a, you know, daily process of, you know, doing whatever you've done since day one to keep sober?
So I would be lying if I said, you know, I've always done what I learned from day one. I am somebody who's an experimenter. And a lot of times I'll try to do the least I have to do. You know, I think I'm very typical, like most people. But what I will say is my life experience has really helped me to decide, how do I want to do this? And again, not just recovery, but the process I take people through, I went through it myself. It's called the divine intelligence process. And again, it's about connecting with your own inner power and maximizing that power to create what it is you want in your life. But you know what I would say is, I've gone through so many different stages with, first of all, I didn't know, this is something I think that's so important. I didn't know that the pathway to what we really want in life is by being authentic, right? The more natural and authentic you are, the easier it will be for you to have everything you want in your life. We're not taught that. We're taught to conform. We are taught to conform. Either you look this way and you carry this bag on your shoulder and you get married by this age and you have the 4.3 kids, or else you're not enough. That's like, if you go online, especially social media, it could be great. You know, if we're listening to someone like you and your show, or it could be a nightmare if, you know, somebody's not being authentic and, you know, and the young girls and they're looking up to this person and this person's, you know, demonstrating, you know, speaking in a certain way, you know, like even using the B word with other girls. I watch some of the social media and I'm like, what is that about? Why is that popular? But I got to be careful not to judge and say, okay, that's this generation. It's not my place to judge. Just try to understand and also just try to be helpful again.
Mm-hmm.
How can we help, you know, women at any time in their life recognize that it's not only wonderful to be yourself, that's where the power lies. And, but it's very challenging and difficult, especially, you know, as a teenager, to break out of that box and dare to wear what you want to wear and dare to talk about what you want to talk about and you know, not try to conform. So mm-hmm. for me, the process of recovery is about returning to yourself, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's about leaving yourself. And recovery is about returning to yourself. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, there's going to be peaks and valleys along the way.
Absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned teenagers, but I think it's the same thing, you know, for adults, like mothers and this mommy wine culture, like they want to fit in. So they are, you know, going along with these mommy needs wine memes and merchandise and whatever else. And, you know, it's not just teenagers that are experiencing peer pressure or wanting to fit in. It's also adults and mothers.
Yeah. It's so true. And even those places that have popped up with the painting and the wine, like those became very big in the last couple of years that you go and you drink wine and you paint. And I'm like, why can't you just paint? Why?
Right. Right.
But, you know, but I do see, I get that so much. Like I've had a lot of friends, especially in big pharma. When I worked in pharma, oh my gosh, Allison, the drinking. Okay. Like, forget about it because it's like a smorgasbord. You know, they would have these meetings and all the alcohol you could drink, and a lot of women coming home at the end of the day, and that's what they look forward to is their glass or two of wine. And I remember I was a manager at one point, and I had a rep who knew I was in recovery, and she was like, do you think I have a problem with alcohol? I mean, I come home every night, and I you know, have to have a couple glasses. Is that a problem? You know, and you know what I know now is it's not for me to assess anybody else's situation. I just always encourage these women to listen to podcasts like yours or go to a meeting or talk to some people who have had issues with alcohol and are in recovery and just, you know, listen to their stories and see if you find yourself in them because, mm-hmm. you know, we can't really say for anybody else. But, you know, again, I just go back to, I didn't know that I didn't have coping skills and through the neuroscience, I learned that we create these neural pathways. So there's not just addiction neural pathways. Wait to hear this. There's a pathway for the people pleaser. There's a pathway for the critic. There's a pathway for the perfectionist. There's a pathway for the avoider and the doubter and the controller. These are literally pathways in your brain. Coping mechanism pathways that have been built for years since we're young to try to protect ourselves from being harmed or to try to get the love we were not naturally getting, maybe from our parents, you know, our caregivers. And so they're wired into our brains, these pathways. So you could, this is where I struggled. I could intellectualize what I needed. I knew. I could see, oh, that's not working. That's not a good idea. And yet I couldn't get my body to do something different for any extended amount of time. I knew it wasn't a good idea to drink and drug well before I stopped drinking and drugging. And yet my body kept going in the direction of drinking and drugging.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I want women to know that if you're very perplexed and confused about why do I know what I need to do and I even want to change and I can't change it, it's very well could be part of the wiring in your brain, which I found 12-step recovery definitely was the beginning of me rewiring. Because when you do that step work, you're looking at what happened and then you go to the column of what was your part. And when you can see your part in a situation and you move out of victim mentality then you really start expanding and healing and growing, and you know, the drink becomes less and less attractive because mm-hmm. your own authentic spirit now is starting to grow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, that's something that people don't know is that those neural pathways are ingrained in us mostly from childhood. They are subconsciously ingrained. Like, logically, like you said, we know that we shouldn't be doing something, but these beliefs that we've had since childhood that have, you know, been reinforced time and time again, that's where the block is coming from. And once you release that block, you're able to rewire in a new story.
Totally. And I know that you realize this too from coaching. All of those strong beliefs are tied to strong emotions. That's how they get wired into the brain. And that's why the feeling part is so critical to the healing of those beliefs, because we need to be able to connect with and process the emotions that wired in those, you know, lies when we were younger, you know, so you can't skip over that, you know, and that's where that affirmation work stuff, you know, people are like, wow, I'm affirming left and right, you know, I'm writing the affirmations 400 times and why isn't this changing? Well, it's not changing because if you wire in over an old belief, all you're really doing is making that old belief even stronger,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know? So a lot of these things, I didn't know this. Most people don't know this. You know, we just want to heal and get better. People have the right intentions. They have desires to move forward. And yet what's in the way? And I know that's what you and I both do is, you know, try to help people realize what's in the way. Because at the end of the day, the spiritual awakening that we're all on this planet going through, resisting it or allowing it. I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's what we're doing. We're either saying mm-hmm. no to it or we're agreeing to it. It's going to happen anyways, you know? And if we're resisting it, oh my goodness, the pain. Mm-hmm. There's so much pain. If we only knew what our spirit wanted to do, which is all, you know, cool and great, we would allow. But, you know, when faced with that uncertainty, like you said, Allison, we're so afraid of the uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, even when things seem certain, they're not certain. I worked right. in pharma. I felt so secure because I had this big pharma job with all these different supports and yada, yada. But you know what? They could have fired, you know, it could have been over in a day.
Mm-hmm.
So things are not secure ever. And one of the this is another thing that I'm trying to work on right now. I love to read Pema Chodron. She's a Buddhist monk, but she talks a lot about just getting really comfortable with what is and not mm-hmm. needing to know where it's going to go. And like you said that, Allison, from the beginning, the mindfulness, the presence, mm-hmm. being present with the presence. How can we be present with the presence, which is always here, which is breathing us? Right? It's so loving. It won't stop. You try to stop your breath, it's not going to stop. It loves us right. so much. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. How can we learn to follow the breath instead of holding our breath, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, and a lot of that, of course, has been years and years. I'm a spiritual coach. That's literally my certification. It's neuroscience, but spirituality is really, when people say, what's a spiritual coach? You know, they think of like, I don't know, Om and talking to spirits, and it's none of that. Spiritual coaching is literally just looking at internal, invisible, the invisible realm of creation, diving mm-hmm. into that and getting clear on what we don't see so that we can experience more of what our authentic self is here to express. That's mm-hmm. spiritual coaching, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's that awareness piece, right? Bringing to the surface what is really going on underneath. And we can't change what we don't know. So that's why the first step to change is always awareness, right?
Right. And not judging ourselves. And my middle name is Deborah, which I didn't know in Hebrew is the judge. I was like, oh, it's so perfect for me. It's perfect. Yeah. Because honestly, very big judge in my head. And I have, through awareness, been able to realize, okay, the natural state of that energy is just awareness and assessment and discernment. That's the positive side of it. But it can, you know, it can move over to that judgy, self-righteous side.
Right.
You know,
yeah. So,
like you said, through awareness, that's the only way I'm going to be able to move that dial.
Right.
What side of that coin am I on right now?
Right. Yeah, it's about observing and just letting it be what it is, not judging those thoughts.
Right, not judging ourselves. So, you know, it shouldn't be this way. I shouldn't feel this way. I shouldn't be 22 years in recovery and being feeling so lost and alone and miserable and hopeless. That shouldn't be happening. So that's my issue in those moments, is the judging that I shouldn't feel that way. I feel whatever I feel.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's okay to feel whatever we feel. It's our reality in that moment. So
for sure,
embrace that. But of course, everything we're talking about, Allison, is that's we don't realize these things coming into recovery. Early recovery for women who are just first coming in, like myself. I wasn't a mom when I came into recovery. I became a mom in recovery. But I remember early recovery of like getting in my bed at like 6 p.m. because I just was afraid what I would do for the rest of the night, left to my own devices after meetings. Like, right? Would I drink? Would I drug? Whatever. So I would go to bed early. Like, I was so terrified of being awake because I didn't trust myself at all. And I had all these addictions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's the beginning where you're just clueless. And, you know, I like to recommend to people at that stage, and I don't like this phrase either. They would say, stick with the winners. Hate that phrase because that's so judgy. Like there's winners and losers.
Right.
I like to say, look for people who just energetically are very attractive and you don't even understand why. Okay. They just kind of pull on you like the moon, right? You just come into their moon. I remember my first sponsor, she just was walking around and I was like, I noticed her. She just had an energy to her that seemed very loving and light. She was light. She was laughing. What the hell is that? I mean, who is this person? And she would say to me, be grateful for your fingers. Be grateful for your toes. She would talk like that. I'll say, be grateful. Again, I wanted to get the bat out and smash her over the head in early recovery. Like, what is she talking about? It took me 2 decades to understand. I'm a slow learner, I guess.
Hey, what? but you learned it.
But I learned it about this gratitude thing. Like, yeah, you know what? My breath doesn't have to come back to me right now. Like, this could be my last breath. Hopefully not, Allison, on your podcast.
Yeah, I think I'd be traumatized. That would be a whole other level of trauma.
But right, how we take that for granted. And right. something just like that could turn our day around if we just realize how precious and how wonderful it is that we're being given that gift over again. How many other gifts, you know, to be grateful for?
Right, and it's about being. It's a process, right? And trusting the process because, like you said, these, you know, feelings of gratitude didn't pop up on day one. You know, it was years and years of doing the work when then you're like, oh, okay. Like I understand what they're saying now, but it's about trusting that you will get to that point. Right.
Well, totally. So I'm just about finishing up. I wrote a book called Addiction Land, probably 3 years after my son was born. And I published it myself with Amazon, and then I never did anything with it. I actually printed the books, put them in my closet, and hid them away because I was so terrified of what my mom was still alive at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what will my mom and my dad think when they hear my truth? And so worried about being ostracized or cut out or lose their love if I go public with this book. So I didn't publish the book. And my mom passed away and it came to me, like the book started to talk to me from the closet. I'm not kidding you. It was like, hello, I'm in here. Are you going to do something with me? Oh my God. Oh yeah, the book's in the closet. So I decided to go back to the book and add in a section. So it's just a bunch of stories from early recovery of what mm-hmm. that was like up until maybe, I don't know, a couple of years sober. I can't remember how many years sober I had in the book, maybe five. And then I added in a section after each story now with the perspective of somebody who has two decades of recovery, kind of like coaching my younger self, if that makes mm-hmm. any sense.
Oh, yeah.
Where I was I love at that. Story.
Yeah.
This is what the older me would say to you to help you through that, that I didn't know at the time. So, you know, but I liked, you know, again, and I'm going to be writing a new book now that has more to do with, you know, what I've gained now since then through a million different wonderful avenues, whether it's like mindful self-compassion classes, or I meditate with a group 3 times a week. It's an AA meeting, but it's 11-step focus. So we say the prayer of St. Francis, and then we meditate together as a group. So many different wonderful things recovery holds in store. You can just, design it. The mm-hmm. way you like it. Find things you love to do, people you love to hang out with, you know, try new things. I came into recovery. I had no idea what I liked. My sponsor was like, well, what are your hobbies? I'm like, drinking,
loving, yeah.
throwing up. I don't know. These are my hobbies. Like, am I supposed to do something else? So I had no clue. And of course, today I have a million. I love photography. I love bike riding. I love yoga. I love dogs. I mean, I could go. I love art. There's so many things. So it was all there, and it's all within everybody who's listening to your show. Everything we need is within us. There's mm-hmm. nothing we need to go find or go get. You know, the big book says the great reality is within, and it's true. It's all within.
Right, right.
So, you know, that's the big, I guess, thing that most people in or out of recovery don't know, that what they're seeking is seeking them, mm-hmm. and it's within.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Absolutely. I think a lot of the time we're looking for something outside of ourselves to help us change, and it doesn't work that way. It comes from within.
Yeah, and that's just a very weird concept. Again, that took a very, very long time for me to understand. So like, that's where I like to spell it out, that what we're talking about is the way you think, what you believe, and what you feel is an inside thing. And when those things can change, and they can change. One thing I'd love to suggest for your listeners that I suggest to people as a neuroscience coach is third person writing is one of the most wonderful ways to get insight. So you write from the perspective of watching yourself. So it goes back to the observer. You're actually shifting yourself into the observer mindset. So you would be saying, oh, Allison went to the store. Allison saw Cheryl. Allison felt sick to her stomach. Allison thought, I hate Cheryl. I don't want to walk up. Right? That's the day-to-day stuff we go through. You just start writing it where you're like writing a story about yourself, what you're doing, what you're thinking, what you're feeling. Get really honest about what's there. And then it's so crazy. It's just new information comes up. You get a shift in perspective from writing it that way for yourself that you didn't have before. And with the shift in perspective in neuroscience, what you learn is when you see it different, you experience it different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I like that exercise. That's a great exercise. You know,
that's just a simple one anybody can do. I'm a big believer in writing.
Yes.
Yep, right?
Yes.
Like exercise. We need to exercise, girls. Like we have to, because the energy needs to move. When it stagnates, that's when we can become very stale and rotten and bitter and miserable.
Oh, good. So you're saying that my Peloton delivery tomorrow will help with this.
I was thinking about getting one of those, but I'm like, I don't know if I'm a spinner. I've tried spinning classes and I didn't love it, but are you a spinner?
No, but it's like the new thing. And I ordered it in March and it's finally coming tomorrow and I can't freaking wait. So
I hear a lot of people love it. I have a lot of friends who use it and they love it.
I think the accountability piece and, you know, just, yeah, I need something different. I need to switch it up.
Then you'll be in a group from what I understand, right?
There's
a teacher and you're doing it with other people.
Right, exactly. And I need that. So I'm excited. Hopefully some of this negative energy will be shifting.
Yeah. So again, we're just knowing we are energetic beings. We are electromagnetic frequencies. Who knew that? We're made of energy. So, you know, shifting that energy and not trying to just, again, going back to that independent, self-sufficient, I'm just going to hunker down with this energy that I already have, that I already know, is really insanity. It's really the definition of insanity. Why wouldn't I open myself up to you and to others and to more that could help me and support me and make it so much easier for me to get through each day? You know, so again, I wrote the book. I hope, again, for your listeners, I would love for them to get, you know, to check it out. People can register just to be informed when the book comes out if they're interested. And again, the focus is just on my early recovery, and more to be revealed, but that I think it could help. You know, what I want to say is I wouldn't have promoted myself, and I don't believe in promoting. So like, let me say that. But I now know that the spirit in me wrote that book to help people. And I was really gut-wrenching honest, like I am all the time, in the book to help people, to identify I'm not alone. Here's another woman who feels the way I feel, that thinks the way that I think. And then to add these insights, hopefully to mentor somebody or guide somebody while they're going through those experiences, stuff that I did not necessarily have myself. Mm-hmm. And I think it's good. And I want to share it now with the world. And that's a big leap for me, Allison, because I would have felt like I was bragging, or I don't know how I would term it, but I wouldn't have been comfortable. And now I'm learning to embrace what it is that I have to share.
Share it, because we need to hear it. So I'm so thankful that you reached out and got you on the podcast. And I want to wrap things up. And the last question that I always ask my guests is, what advice would you give to the mother who is questioning her relationship to alcohol?
So I think I said it a little bit earlier. You know, I think I, in particular, want to be very careful about giving anybody advice, because advice can tend to put up walls for people. I like to pull it back into just, I would share a little bit more about my story and just say that what really helped me in terms of connecting with other sober women was their open-armed approach to me, that loving, unconditional, non-judgy acceptance of me, like to put yourself around women in sobriety, and not everybody's going to be able to give you that kind of energy or love or support, but to just notice who is able to offer that and maybe gravitate towards those people and get their phone numbers and try to get to know them and let them get to know you and just see what happens from there.
I love that. I love that. All right. So where can our listeners find you, on social media or your book?
Thank you so much for asking, Allison. So I have a website, KathyMarcusCoaching.com, and Kathy is spelled, well, they can see it on your podcast, but C-A-T-H-I, which is different. So KathyMarcusCoaching.com. And then I'm also on Instagram and Facebook under Kathy Marcus Coaching, and would love, love, love to connect with more women in recovery.
Awesome. Well, thank you again for your time today. I really appreciate it. And I know that our listeners are going to find some good tidbits in this conversation.
Thank you so much for having me, Allison. I love what you're doing. Thank you for your mission.
Thank you so much.